friends, welcome to another episode of the Sacred Cocoon Podcast. This is Lottie and I will be your host. So today what I would like to talk to you all about is some common tarot reading and psychic reading myths. And what I would really like to do is debunk those myths, or at least tell you my opinion of why they're not true. Being a professional reader, and especially reading in a setting like a shop where I'm hearing people walking past a lot, and you know, hearing a lot of people even that don't get readings tend to be the ones that believe in these things the most, it seems to be. But it can be really frustrating just because they're so limiting, I find. Like, most things I hear that aren't true are things that kind of stop people from like actually delving into tarot or delving into like psychic experience and, you know, trying things for themselves and things like that. It's so frustrating to me, but I don't just want to, you know, like launch out of my little room and be like, well, actually, because that just feels really rude to me. And I just don't want to do that. It just doesn't feel right. But at the same time, it's really frustrating. And it doesn't do anyone any good to have those beliefs, I don't think. Because for one, they're limiting to the person that has them a lot of the time. And for two, they then pass it on to someone else. That's how I usually hear it. It's like, oh, did you know that this? And I'm like, oh, no. Please stop. Yeah, it just gets passed around, you get misinformation. I think that can be a big problem, actually, in especially with social media and a lot of, you know, witchy things that go on social media, or, you know, tarot or psychic stuff and whatever. It's like anyone can make a post with any information, and then if it goes viral or, you know, lots of people see it and like it, then they start passing it on, and it's really hard to know, like, where is this coming from? Does the person that made it actually know this, or is this an opinion, or is this something that, you know, we don't know where it comes from? And I think the internet, and including social media, is a great place to find community, as a witchy person, as a, you know, tarot reader, if you're getting started in these things especially, or just to find fellow readers, people who also, you know, do what you do, so you don't feel so much on your own. I love that, and that there's such a spread of information, and you can learn so much awesome stuff. So I definitely don't want to come across as one of those people that's, you know, like, knocking it, because I'm not. But having said that, it definitely does have that downside of you don't really necessarily know where the information is from, how true it is, you know, where did it come from? And then also crediting can be a big problem. So you don't really know where that idea came from originally. And this seems to be the case for some, you know, myths around tarot and myths around psychic stuff too. It's like, who originally said that? Where did that come from? Nobody knows. It's just someone said it at some point in history and someone else liked it, and then it just started, you know, it snowballed. So I would like to take the opportunity in this episode to debunk some of those myths and explain to you why I believe that they are not true, and what I actually think is the case instead. Before we get into that, I just want to let you guys know a couple of things, and answer a quick question that I got on Instagram from a very dear friend. I'll get into that first, because that's just going to be real quick. So coming up for the rest of October, this coming Saturday and next Saturday, I will be reading at different events going on at Crystal Bridges Art Museum in Bentonville, Arkansas. So the event this weekend, honestly, I don't really know a lot about it. I just know it's a teen night, so it's something to do with teens. Every time I say the word teens as well, I always think of Justin McElroy. So I don't know if you guys listen to My Brother, My Brother and Me, which is a podcast that's run by these three brothers. But if you do, then you'll probably know the teens thing. But yeah, I can't think of it without the way he says, oh my gosh, yeah. It's silly. But anyway, I can't say teens without thinking about that. Teens? Anyway, yeah, teens. So it's the teens night. I think it's going to be like with their parents, but I don't fully know. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. I and some of the other readers from the shop and one of our Reiki healers from the shop is also going to be there. So we'll be there on Saturday evening, and then the following Saturday as well, we are doing the Halloween in the Hollow, big Halloween party that's going to be there. It's going to be me and the same team of readers as well. So there's going to be me, Fred Allen, and Red Star will be the ones doing the tarot readings. And then I think Fred Allen's probably also doing Lenormand. And then Red Star will also be doing astrology, probably. Not astrology, sorry, numerology. We just got a new astrologist at the shop, so it's like we've got so much going on. And then Juliana will be doing the Reiki. So yeah, if you're in the area, come see us. It would be super fun to see you. I do believe they are both paid events, so I would recommend to check out the website first. But yeah, that's where we'll be there. As usual, this coming weekend I will be at the Four of Wands on Friday and Saturday as usual. So if you want to get a reading, feel free to come see me. Next Friday I will not be there because it's gonna be too much. Saturday is gonna be wild. Because I'm gonna be working from 10:30 to about 4, and then going and then being in town or waiting around or whatever, and then going to Crystal Bridges with the other readers, and we start I think at 9, and then we go until 12:30. So that is going to be a long day. So I can't do the Friday. I've given myself that day to just rest and kind of get myself ready. But yes, there's that. As always, you can also always book a reading with me privately, so over the phone or as an audio recording. You can see all my offerings in my Etsy, which is the sacredcocoon.etsy.com. And if you send me a direct message either through Instagram or Facebook, and we do it directly through PayPal or Venmo, you'll get 10% off the prices in the shop. And just to let all of you all know, because I don't know if I've ever explicitly stated like what my hours are when I'm not at the shop. So Sundays and Mondays I don't read, because those are my wife's days off, so we really try and have those days together. And then Tuesday to Thursday I generally am available for readings between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. So yeah, there's that. Okay, so with all that said, I'm gonna quickly answer the question that my lovely friend asked me, and then we'll get into debunking the myths. All right, so the question was, what is, or how do you tell the difference between coincidences and synchronicity? And then also, I think, between, say, coincidences and signs from your guides. Okay, so here's the thing. For me, I don't really believe in coincidences. I think that if you notice a coincidence, it's big enough for it to be a synchronicity, if that makes sense. So the way I would just describe a synchronicity is like things that happen and line up. Like, you know what a coincidence is. So I think of that as synchronicity, as in those things happened and lined up. You also noticed that happened, and it gave you that feeling of like it's meant to happen. It's supposed to, you're supposed to see that, right? Or you're supposed to experience that in some way. I find that if I get that feeling, I just take it as that's a synchronicity. I don't really count it as a coincidence. I'll still use the word coincidence sometimes, but I don't really view anything as coincidence. So there's that part. Hopefully that helps. I would just say, you know, if you notice it, then I would just take it as synchronicity and think about it in terms of that. Like, what is it telling you? What are you getting from that? What does it make you think about? You know, that's probably what your guides are trying to get across to you. And then how do you tell if something is a message from your guides or a sign from your guides? Again, kind of, if you're noticing it, I just take that as my guides are probably trying to get me to notice something because it keeps happening. Or the universe wants me to notice that, or however you want to put it. The other thing is that I find that guides will tend to give you really consistent messages. So what I mean by that is that the things that you're seeing, or the, you know, synchronicities that you're noticing, the coincidences that you're noticing, they'll tend to, if they're guides especially, be like this. It's like they'll pick certain symbols, or they'll pick certain things that relate to them, and then they'll use those to communicate something. And I find that this happens especially if you have a conversation with them and kind of set up a couple of things or symbols with them ahead of time to say, you know, if you show me this, it means this, or it makes you think this. And they'll probably, it'll be a two-way thing, so they'll show you certain things over and over, and then you'll come to know what they mean as well. But say for me, with Bianca, who the person who asked this question knows about Bianca, so with Bianca, she has some very specific images, or very specific things that she'll use in order to, like, basically tell me that it's her and to get my attention. So butterflies, and there's one type of butterfly in particular that she tends to use a lot, and I don't know what it's called, but it's just, I know what it looks like, and it's usually this one type of butterfly. Sometimes I'll see other ones, but this one in particular seems to be related to her. She'll use bluebirds, sometimes blue jays if bluebirds aren't around, but mostly bluebirds. She'll also use bear imagery, so she'll turn up in dreams a lot as a bear. She's turned up as a badger before, and she'll use those images, like, I'll see them on TV, I'll see them on a billboard, I'll see, you know, and, like, in quick succession, so they have that synchronistic kind of effect of, like, seeing them one after the other. And that's really what I would say is guides, when they communicate, they'll keep showing you the thing in order to, they do it for a couple of reasons. The first reason is usually to get your attention to that thing, but the second thing is to show you, like, yes, this is me, therefore I'm doing this thing over and over. And the other thing you can do with them to see if it's a sign from them or not, or, you know, a communication from them or not, is to ask them to do something specific or show you something specific after you've asked them to show that that's them. So for example, with me and Bianca, like, what I could do is say, okay, I think you're showing me, you know, bears, so after this, show me a bear somewhere, right? And then on TV, I'll see, like, a Charmin commercial, or, you know, we'll go past a billboard and it's got, something to do with bears on it. Might even just be the word bears. So your guides will usually react to you asking for that and give you something, you know, usually some kind of sign or something, or whatever your agreed thing is with them. When you're first starting out, it's even more important, I think, to have a conversation with them, like a running kind of conversation, so that you can get used to working with them. And also, that's going to be a time when you're really learning how they show up. What I find with guides sometimes is that they've been showing up this way for a really long time, and you're just now starting to actually know that that's what it is. You know, it's like, Bianca was a bear in my life since before I, like, I have a memory of being, like, two and having something to do with bears coming up, but I didn't piece it together until years and years later. But she kept the same consistent thing. It just took me time to notice what it was. She's like, you got there eventually. We all do. So yeah, hopefully that's helpful. Honestly, with guys, it just takes time, really. That's the same for everything, right? It just takes time to build it up and get used to it. But that's what I would say. I treat everything that I notice as coincidence, as a synchronicity, and just think about what that could mean. What is it showing me? Because here's the thing, even if it's not, you know, it's not synchronicity, I haven't found that anything bad comes of it, because it just makes me more contemplative and think more about what's going on around me, so I'm more in tune with things. And then if it is, then I pick up on it and I notice it, and then I think about it and work it out, you know. So there's no real lose in that situation, I don't think. And hopefully that answers the question. And then the other question that I got was from my very cheeky wife, who said, talk about how much your wife loves you. So it's so much, you guys. She just loves me so much. So thank you, honey, for that great question. So yeah, so much is the answer to that, and I love you very much. So all right. With all that said, now we're going to get into the rest of the episode, proper, if you like. So debunking, or talking about common tarot myths, common psychic kind of myths and misinformation, in my opinion, and what I think about that, and what I think is actually right or true. Okay, so the one that I hear frequently is with tarot cards, that you have to be given your first deck. You cannot buy your first deck, or some variation of that. You can't buy any decks for yourself. You have to be given every deck that you receive. But it's definitely the first deck thing. It's like, no, you can't buy your own first deck. You have to be given your own first deck. And then there's other variations too, like you have to be given it by a family member, you have to be given it by a someone who already reads, you have to be given it by someone who's been reading for a really long time. I literally hear so many different variations of this, and it's none of it is true. So here's the thing, I think that it is nice to pass on decks to new readers, to encourage people to be a new reader. And if you have a deck that you're not using as a reader and you think it would be good for them, you know, give it to them or buy them one or whatever. And yeah, of course it can be nice if you're given a deck as a gift, but I don't think it's a prerequisite. And I honestly don't understand where this myth comes from, because tarot is tarot, cards are cards. They're not, like, I don't imbue the cards with some magical property just because I'm a reader and that's the only reason that the cards would work, and then I have to give them to you. It's like, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, you can probably hear me getting incense. I'm going to try and stay calm, but, like, I really don't get it. Tarot cards are tarot cards. Cards are cards. Like, it doesn't, they're just as magical and wonderful and amazing and whatever you want to think of it as, if you buy them for yourself, as if someone else buys them for you. And in all honesty, I really recommend buying your own first deck and buying your own decks in general. And here's why. Someone could buy you a deck because it looks really cool, because they think you'll like it, because, you know, whatever, it was there, and they know you're interested in tarot, but you might not connect with that deck, you might not resonate with it, and so it's not going to read well for you, you're not going to be able to read it well, it's not going to be clear, and it's going to make learning so hard. Learning is harder if you don't connect with your deck, or if it doesn't have particularly clear imagery. And so, you know, there's the general starter decks and beginner decks, and I do want to do a separate episode on this at some point, but you've got the standard starter decks, like the Rider-Waite-Smith, things like that, Hanson Roberts, the Connolly Tarot, what else is there, the Robin Wood, they're all super common starter decks. And then there's things like the Easy Tarot. I'm looking at my decks right now and seeing if there's anything that I would say is like a standard starter deck. I don't think I've got any of them out right now. But anyway, those are a couple of the standard starter ones. So if you get someone that deck, they're probably going to be able to read with it. You might not super like the style, but they're very clear. They make a lot of sense, all of that. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that you will connect with them. So, for example, I really don't like the colouring of the original Rider-Waite-Smith. And there's so many versions of the Rider-Waite-Smith now. Like, the one I use is the Radiant Rider-Waite. There's also the Centennial Rider-Waite. There's so many different versions. The Universal... I can't even think of the other ones. There's so many variations on that. But if you don't like the art style, you're not going to be able to read with it very well. I don't like the Rider-Waite-Smith, the original style. The colours, at least. It's so yellow. Like, I just don't like the colours. And it makes me not want to read with it. Like, I don't think I've ever owned the original Rider-Waite-Smith. And I don't think I ever want to. I don't like it particularly. And it's just, you just can't read very well with a deck that you don't like. So, you know, if someone gets you a deck, but you don't get on with it, then that could really either stop you from learning altogether, or it could really, you know, put a kind of rock in your path that you're trying to get over, and you're trying to learn or you're trying to read with something that just is not intuitive to you, or it just doesn't make sense, it just, you know, doesn't like spark things for you and whatever. So if you buy your own first deck and you buy your own decks, you know what you're drawn to and you know what you like, and you can, you know, feel them out and go with what you want to get. And then the other thing too is, if you happen to get a deck that you think you like and you think you're going to get on with it, and then you don't, and it happens, I have decks that I have bought and then don't get on with, when that happens but you've bought it for yourself, you don't feel quite as bad as if someone has bought it for you and then you don't get on with it, because then you're like, oh, I don't want to tell them that I can't get on with it, but you know, I don't really like it. And then again, that just puts a hurdle in your path of learning. So a lot of people, I think, get a deck, realize they don't like it, and then just put it down and never go back to it, because they're like, well, you know, I can't buy another one because I'm not supposed to buy it for myself, so what am I supposed to do? And that you just get stuck. So I just don't like that. That is not true in my experience. Okay, so moving on to the next one. You shouldn't touch someone else's cards, / you shouldn't let someone else touch your cards. Okay, so, you know, you shouldn't touch someone else's cards. Yeah, fair enough. You shouldn't touch someone else's cards without their permission, or without them, you know, handing them to you, without them saying it's okay, without them basically giving you consent, because it's someone's property. It's not really because they're tarot cards, in my opinion. It's not because they have some special energy that, you know, other things don't have. And I'm probably gonna catch some flack on that a little bit, because I think a lot of people do think that tarot cards have a special energy to them, and you know, I think when we cherish something and it's special to us, and we imbue it with energy, then yeah, they can have special energy and they can be very sacred. But I don't think they're inherently like that. I think we imbue them with that, and that's the same as with anything, you know, like a blanket could be like that. Like, I don't want someone to just go grab my blanket off my bed and use it. Like, that's my, I have one blanket in particular that is my blanket and it's what I sleep with, and yeah, I don't want someone to just go randomly grab my blanket. That's my blanket, you know. If I offer you my blanket, that's fine. Or if you ask, can I use your blanket, and I say yes, you may use my blanket, then that's fine. But I wouldn't want you to just go get it out of my bed, right? And it's the same for cards. So I don't think you shouldn't touch someone else's cards, because you're going to mess up the energy, or you're going to damage it in some way. I don't think that's true, at least not in my opinion. I just don't think you should touch someone else's cards without their permission, because it's their property. And I think it's fair enough if they don't want you to touch them, you know, because they are special things. Like, I don't just want some random stranger to go touch my blanket. I don't, probably wouldn't lend my blanket to someone I don't know. So it's the same thing to me. The other way around can be, oh, you shouldn't let someone else touch your cards. This I just find wildly impractical if you're doing readings for other people, because here's the thing, people like to touch the cards. They like to feel like they're doing the the cards are theirs, that they have their energy on it and they're pulling the cards, they're choosing which ones, and then you're reading them. It makes it feel more personal. I've gotten so many people tell me, I really love that you let me pull the cards, you know, I didn't think I was going to get to do that. I really like that I got to do that. So people really like it. And I've had people be like, in the beginning when I was doing it, when I was drawing everyone's cards for them and doing it, I've had people be like, well, that's not my reading because, you know, it's you pulled them, which is also not true. But I'll go into that in a second. So I find that letting the person touch the cards and pull the cards themselves, it just helps with the reading. Is it necessary? Gonna get into this, like I said, in a second. No, not at all. But I do think it's nice, and I definitely don't think your cards are gonna be damaged energetically by someone other than you touching them. At the end of the day, again, they're just an object. Cards are, they're just pieces of paper. And some people find that to be, you know, basically sacrilege, because they're like, no, they're special, but yeah, they're special because of the meaning attributed to them that you've given them, not because they're inherently, you know, they're printed with thousands and thousands like them. They're not unique. they're just paper, so it's fine. You can, you know, clear the energy, you can make the energy whatever you want. People touching the cards are not going to damage them. Having said that, there are some decks that have, for me, personal meaning, and that I wouldn't let someone else use them because they're very personal to me. Having said that, you know, they're a mass-produced deck. Yeah, that's as may be, but this is my particular deck. And I don't want it to be just for everyone. There's certain decks that I only use for me and my wife. There's certain decks that I'll let friends use, but I don't want to use it with someone that I don't know, you know. And then there's some decks that I'm happy to use them with everyone. I do get a feeling from decks of like, this is for you, or this is for everyone, whatever. So again, even though they're an object and I don't think they're inherently, like, you know, I don't know how to put it. I know I'm going to annoy someone with this, but you give them their meaning. I do think they have their own personality, and that, so you'll get a feel for that, and it kind of coincides with the way that you read, and so you'll get a feeling of, you know, is this something I can read for someone else and would make sense, or is this really much more of a personal thing, or something where I can read it for people that I know and we can have a more informal conversation, or I know more about them or whatever, but not people that I don't know, etc. So that's the second one, is I don't think having other people touch your cards is a bad thing. Obviously, make your own choice, but I don't think you should be scared to let other people touch them, and vice versa. You know, as long as you have permission, I don't think there's anything wrong with touching someone's cards. You're not going to get cursed like the instant that you touch them if you know have permission, or and it's all above board and everything. It's cool, you know. Yeah, so then the next one that I would say is that you have to cleanse your cards. Or do I want to do that? No, I want to go back a little bit, sorry. Next I want to do the that you have to shuffle the cards yourself in order for it to be your reading, because I just touched on that. So that's not true. And here's how I know that's not true. I do readings for people all the time, online, long distance, in ways in which they cannot shuffle the cards. And the reading is still for them. Like, I still read it for them, see information about them, see information for them. They get the reading, they give me the feedback. Yes, this makes sense. Wow, that was super accurate. Whoa, that's kind of spooky that you could pick up on that. All of that stuff. The cards are not for me, they are for that person. And I can do that whether you're sat opposite me in the chair or whether you're 1,000 miles away, you know, in another country. It doesn't matter. Like, I, as a reader, I'm tapping into your energy. That's how I'm reading your cards versus reading my cards. I could do, you know, shuffle the cards with focusing on your energy, pull the cards, do a reading for you, shuffle the deck again, focus it on my energy and my question, pull the cards, and the reading would be for me. But there's nothing to say that if I pull the cards, the reading will not be your reading. I understand why people think that that's true, and why people want to, you know, pull the cards themselves, because I probably would want to pull my own cards too if I was having a reading, so I completely get it, but it's not necessary for them to pull the cards. Some people really don't like to pull their own cards, and I'm not entirely sure why, but it's like, that's fine, you know, I can pull them, it's not a problem. And yeah, if you're the reader, you can pull the cards, don't worry about it. It's really just focusing on the person's energy. Okay, so then the next one that I want to talk about is, just forgotten now. The thing that I said before, what was it? 1 second. Oh, the energy thing, the energy cleansing thing. Of you have to cleanse your cards, or you have to cleanse them in a certain way, etc. I really don't find that I have to cleanse my cards a lot. I don't know what it is. I just don't find that very often. I think it's because, you know, they're my workhorse deck is a common way to refer to it, which is just means that it's the deck that I use with everyone. It's the one that I use most often. It's the clearest. It's the most universal. It's the Radiant Rider Waite is my main workhorse deck. I just don't feel like I need to cleanse them super often. Some people, you know, this really is like your mileage may vary. Some people feel like they have to cleanse it between every single reading. Some people will find just once at the beginning and once at the end. Some just once at the end. Really, I don't know. I just don't. For me, what I do is I shuffle the deck in between every person that I read for, and I also go through and put all the cards upright again. So I'll basically like deal them out into like 10 piles or something, and make sure that they're all upright, put them back together, shuffle them. That to me clears the energy, if need be. I also keep mine on a selenite charging plate, which I find helps to just keep the energy clear. But I just don't find that they need cleansing very often. Like, I find, you know, if they're in the bag and I just pull them out and then we shuffle them and then we read them and I do it for a couple people in a row, it doesn't seem to be an issue. Like, I really think this is, yeah, it's different for everyone, but if you feel like you can't cleanse them, you know, you don't have your preferred tools or whatever, I would say don't worry about it. Don't sweat it. Don't let it stop you from doing readings, because I really think it's okay. And I also think there's a lot more ways to cleanse things than we tend to think. So one thing that I do is, like I said, I keep it on a selenite plate. And I reorder the cards, as in I go around and go through and put them all back upright, and I feel like that clears the energy. You can also like knock them on the table. Some people will like sweep them with their hands. You can clap, you can use a bell, you can use sage, pass them through the smoke, incense. put them in moonlight, you know, all that kind of stuff. There's so many ways to cleanse things. Honestly, I think just holding them and asking that they be cleansed, you know, ask spirit to cleanse them, ask the archangels to cleanse them, whatever feels best for you. But there's so many ways to do it. You really don't have to have an elaborate ritual, or I think you don't have to have certain, these very specific tools in order to make sure that they are clear and good for reading. I want to say here that cards can pick up energy. I've had cards that I've bought that had some kind of funky energy about them, and they did need cleansing. And if you're doing like back to back to back readings, then yeah, you might, you know, need to cleanse them. So like I said, it really is, it varies, and obviously go by whatever you think and feel is best. But if it's making you feel anxious, just don't worry about it. Like, just hold your cards, ask that they be cleansed, and they will be cleansed, and it's completely okay. Okay, what else is there? Oh, okay, so I think this is probably going to be the last one, so that I can then move on to some, I think, probably psychic misconceptions after the break. But there is the misconception that tarot is better than oracle, and you have to be a good reader, finger quotes, has to be able to read tarot, and shouldn't read oracle. I've seen professional tarot readers say this, and I'm like, why? I don't think that's true at all. I don't really understand that bias, but whatever. I don't think that's true. I think there's so many different ways to be psychic, to be intuitive, to receive information. You can probably hear my mother-in-law's dog like banging at the door. He bangs on the door and is like, it's okay, you're completely fine. He's in the yard, he's having fun, it's fine. He's like, no, I need to come inside immediately. And then he'll want to go outside immediately after that. So anyway, sorry if you can hear that. But anyway, I think, yeah, there's so many ways to be psychic and intuitive and get information and receive messages. And at the end of the day, tarot cards and oracle cards are just different types of cards with pictures on them and words, probably to, you know, jolt your intuition or to allow information to come through to you, to allow guides to communicate, spirit, whatever you want to call it, to communicate to you, so that your intuition is triggered and then you start getting that psychic information. So I don't think that either or is better or worse than the other. It's really weird to me. I think it's because people tend to sometimes get a bit of an ego thing about tarot, where they're like, oh, you know, I've done tarot for this many years and I memorized all the meanings and I know all of this stuff and I'm, you know, it's like, whatever, man, it's whatever. It really doesn't make you a better person that you learn tarot. You know, you just learn. That's the only difference between someone who has learned tarot and is good at tarot and someone who hasn't learned tarot and isn't good at tarot yet. The only difference is that one has learned and the other hasn't. That's it. Doesn't make you better, doesn't make you special if you can read tarot. You know, it's not in that sense. Anyway, it doesn't make you more special than the person who doesn't know how to read tarot. I get really mad about this, because it's like that's damaging. Because if you hear that from a reader, here's what happens a lot of the time. Someone who is new to reading hears that from a professional reader, hears it from a reader with, you know, that 10 20 30 whatever amount of experience years that they're talking about, and they feel scared and they feel intimidated and they don't want to do it and they're too scared then to ask questions and they give up. And it's like, how dare you scare someone off just because you have an ego, just because you need someone to think you're so cool because you can read tarot. Like, sod off. If anyone ever says that to you, just tell them to take a hike. Like, literally, it's not even worth, don't bother with them. Like, it's not, they should not do that. They should not act that way towards you. There was no difference. I think what happens is, too, tarot, you know, has its own system, and it has an established system, whereas oracle decks are generally all different. They usually have their own system, or they're just a deck of cards that don't have, like, you know, they don't usually have suits, they don't usually have majors and minors, that kind of thing. And so, one, people tend to think they're easier, and two, they're, you know, people kind of recommend them more for beginners. And I think they can be easier because you're not trying to learn the system of tarot, which when you first start, you know, 78 cards is a lot and it feels really daunting. So oracle can be a really good way to start off because you don't have to deal with that and learn that straight away. You can get used to seeing the images and getting the information, and then you can apply that to tarot if you want to. And it's a lot easier, I think, once you start getting the ability to like read an image and just get the information from it, you can transfer that into tarot really easily and read the images there too. And then you also, you know, typically oracle decks have less cards. They usually have anywhere from 30 to 50 cards. That varies wildly. Some decks are huge, some decks are smaller. But that's they typically have slightly less cards than tarot, so that can be something too. And yeah, they're just I get why people suggest them to beginners. If someone's feeling intimidated by tarot, is to maybe try oracle instead, you know, first. But if you just really love oracle cards and you don't want to ever transition to tarot, that does not mean that you're not a good reader, that you can't become a professional reader, that you're any less good, any less psychic, any less intuitive than, you know, Joe Bloggs, who's been reading tarot for 30 years and, you know, can read with his eyes closed. It's whatever, you know, there is no, there's nothing to say that you and they are less or more good at it based on the system that you use. So that is not true. Please don't let someone make you think that. But I think I'm going to stop there for this part because this is going to be a long episode again. And we're going to go to the ad break. And then when we come back, I'm going to tackle more just psychic myths and misinformation or things that are commonly spread and what I think about that. All right. Of tea, and now we're gonna keep going. We're gonna get into psychic myths or myths about psychics. Okay, so I consider myself to be the first thing I would probably say about myself is I'm a tarot reader, but I also consider myself to be psychic. I think everyone has psychic ability. Everyone is psychic to some degree. It's an inherent human quality, I find. But yeah, I've had to really do a lot of work with the term psychic because, you know, there's so much like bad feeling around psychics, of psychics being, you know, they want to take people's money, they are trying to trick people, they're dishonest, they're, you know, all that stuff. So it took me a really long time to like deal with that within myself and to get confident telling someone that I am psychic or am a psychic, you know, without like cringing, because I really thought they were going to judge me. And then I realized, like, why do I care? Like, if I say I'm psychic and someone says, like, that's not true, it's like, well, for one, I can, ask me whatever, we can do a reading and I'll finger quotes prove it to you. But for two, I don't care if you don't believe me. Like, it's whatever, like, it's no big deal. Also, if you don't believe me and you're gonna be you know, a butt about it, then just get, I don't want to talk to you, so just leave me alone. Yeah, so it took me a long time to get used to using that term, but now I can use it and it doesn't bother me. I do find, so for me, I tend to say I'm a tarot reader, just because that tells people generally, like, what skill I'm using or what method I'm using. Because the thing with psychic tends to be that people don't really know what that means, or they have a idea of what it means, but there's so many ways to be psychic or to be a psychic that telling someone that you're psychic doesn't really give them that much information about what you can actually do. And we're going to get into this in a second. But yeah, so I tend to say, you know, I'm a professional tarot reader, because then they know. If they know what tarot cards are, then they're like, oh, okay, cool, you read cards. How? Or if they don't know what tarot is, it's like, oh, what's that? And then I tell them, and then you can get into it. Just simplifies it, makes it easier. And generally then people know a little bit more, like, whether they want to have a reading or not, whether they want to work with me or not. And we can go from there. Okay, psychic. So, what's some myths about psychics? Okay, one myth about psychics is that all psychics can see and talk to dead people. That is not true. So, people that can see and talk to dead people, or see, you know, or have some ability to perceive dead people in whatever way, that's a medium. A medium is a type of psychic, but not every single psychic sees, talks to, you know, can pick up on dead people, on spirits, on ghosts, whatever you want to call it. So for me, I was raised in a family of mediums, which meant I grew up we were spiritualist. So that just means that, you know, spiritualism is about that belief in that we go back to spirit, that there is an afterlife, that's what that is, and you can communicate with them. So that's what spiritualism is. I grew up in that. My family are mediums, or were mediums. I don't know now, actually. My dad still is, but I don't think he uses it very much. I'm the big one that uses it now, I guess. The big one? That's such a weird way to say that. Anyway, I think I'm the main one in our family that uses it now, but I'm not really 100% sure. We don't talk about it a lot. Seems weird, but whatever. So I grew up being able to see, being able to talk to you, being able to hear, perceive dead people, spirits, ghosts, etc. So did my dad, so did his father. You know, it goes back to my great-granddad on my dad's side. We could all communicate with spirit. So we are mediums. Not every psychic can do that. And also, not every psychic wants to do that. And not every medium wants to do it either. So, yes, I was raised in a medium family. Yes, I have medium abilities, mediumship abilities, mediumistic, whatever you want to call it. But in the terms that people think of them, I don't really like using them. So I actually think that when you're communicating with guides, you're using a medium ability, because you're communicating with a spirit. They're in spirit, they're your guide, therefore you're a medium. But I don't really like talking just to, like, dead people, I guess you could say. You know, for me, I will do mediumship sessions if I agree to it, if I can connect with the person in spirit, if they've crossed over, or if I can safely figure out what's going on with them if they haven't crossed over. I can do it and I will do it sometimes, but I don't really like to. It's not my main thing. It's very emotional. It's really tiring and draining, just again because of the emotions. And it can be more dangerous just because if someone isn't crossed over, you can be dealing with someone who's very confused, who's feels stuck, who might be acting out, might be being aggressive, that kind of thing. So medium stuff is really not my preferred cup of tea. I can do it and will have one occasionally, but you know, it's not my main thing. So there's that thing there. Another myth or misconception that I run into a lot is that psychics can just read your energy without any tools. And this is sometimes called a no tools psychic. So that just means that they look at you or they touch you or whatever and they can read you. This isn't all psychics. Not all psychics can do this. I can't really do this. And here's the thing, I probably could if I wanted to, but I don't want to. I don't walk around open to other people's energy. I'm very strict about it. You've heard me say this a million times by this point, but I'm very strict on boundaries. I don't just let anyone's energy come into my energy, and I don't walk around with my antennas on, basically looking at everyone's energy. I'm very intentional. So if someone comes into a room and says, oh yeah, what's wrong with me? I'm like, I have no idea, because I'm not just tuned into you. Like I have to choose to tune in, and I choose to tune in through cards or through some like thing that I can look at, because it helps me to hone down the messages that I'm getting. Otherwise I tend to get bombarded by images. So sometimes what will happen is someone will come in and I'll start talking to them and I'll start getting messages and images, and I'll tell them, and then we won't use cards at all. So I can do it, but usually I prefer to go through cards just because they are a buffer and they just help me to make it make sense more. Otherwise, sometimes what can happen with psychic information is just like you get all these random things and you have no idea as the psychic what it means, so you just have to like pass it on. That I do generally find to be true is that I probably don't know what the message that I'm getting means unless it's really clear, like I'm trying to tell them I'm okay, I'm trying to say this. But usually spirits, in my experience, like guides, or even reading an energetic situation, say if there's been an accident or they need healing in some area, it will be very metaphorical. It's usually in images, and it's usually more like a story that will make sense to them, the client specifically, whereas it will make no sense to me because it's not my personal experience. I've never had that experience. I don't know them, you know, and even if I do know them, it's probably something really obscure. Like, here's this thing that you did with your dad when you were two. Like, how could I know that, you know? So yeah, I usually don't really know what the message means. Especially if I am just going purely off intuitive, like what's coming through, rather than looking at cards, because usually what I'll get if I'm reading cards is I can look at the card, know what that means, so know what, say, this card's meaning is, and then I kind of intuit the meaning to do with that person, and then I get messages regarding that, and it will kind of spin off. And then it's like, oh yeah, now there's this, and then this image is coming through regarding that card, and then we're looking at this, so it's talking about this situation, and so I'll know a little bit more about what's going on. But, you know, if I'm purely getting information, just passing it on, then I probably don't know. I probably don't know what it's about. So that leads me to the next myth, which is that you should believe everything that a psychic tells you, that psychics are always right, they can't be wrong, all that kind of stuff. Not true. So I do my absolute best. I connect with the person's guide, I connect with, you know, the highest good. This is for the highest good of them, it's the highest good of everyone. I am told that I get really accurate information, that it makes a lot of sense, all of that kind of stuff. I've had people come back and say, oh yeah, this did happen. You said this was the timing, and then this happened at this point, and it made sense, and it related to the reading, etc. But you don't know who that psychic is connected to. They might not be connected to your guides. Psychics can work with spirits that aren't necessarily good. And so if they don't do a lot to protect themselves, and things like that, or they're not very good at boundaries, which you'll find this sometimes. Some people that are psychic are, you know, they have really clear abilities, but they don't put any boundaries up. They don't determine between anything that comes up to them, so anything can give them information. That information is not necessarily true or right. So here's my advice. If you go to see someone and they tell you something and it just really doesn't feel right, and it doesn't sit right in your gut, if it makes you feel creeped out, and I don't mean like this is creepy accurate because I hear that, but if it, like, you know that like skin prickly, like, whoa, this feels really creepy feeling, if you get that feeling, just as soon as you can, just leave. You know, pay for your session, leave, cleanse, and then don't go back, and don't let it, like, as much as you can, just don't let it kind of like dictate what you think about that thing, because it's could be wrong. That's all I can say, really. If it feels wrong, it probably is wrong. Not all psychics get their information from that highest good, from the best place. Not all spirits are good. Not all spirits tell the truth. So, you know, if a psychic who has medium abilities is talking to a spirit who is earthbound, they probably don't know any more about you than, you know, you're the person down the road who you've never spoken to in your life. They could die and they would know just as much about you as this person who's giving this person information. But what tends to happen with spirits is they kind of get big for their boots, and they'll try and put on, you know, ones that aren't crossed over and are acting this way. They're not necessarily evil, or they're not necessarily even really bad, but they just get like an ego thing where it's like, oh yeah, this person believes me, I can tell them whatever I want and they'll believe me. So that can happen. If it doesn't feel right, then trust your gut instinct, it's not right. So and just like everyone else, we're not always right. We can be wrong, you know. I don't really know how to describe that, because it's like, well, you know, if you're getting your information from spirit and it's for the highest good, then how could it be wrong? And what I would say to that is, you always have freedom of choice and free will. So you could come in for a reading, I could see something, and what I will always try and say is, based on this path that you're on right now and the energies that you've got going on right now, which I'm going to be checking in, you know, throughout the reading, does this make sense to you, you know, based on that right now, here's what I see as the possible outcome, here's what's most likely to happen, here's the probability, etc. You could go outside right after that reading and do something that's completely different, and you would change the course of the whole path, and then it might not come to pass. So that's how it could be wrong, you know. So I would just say, don't put your own autonomy in someone else's basket, because no matter how good their intentions, there's no way to say that they are 100% correct 100% of the time. And even if they were, you shouldn't be making your own choices. Someone else should not be making your choices for you. So there's that. What else is there? What else is there about psychics? There's so many things. I feel like I need one more thing. I honestly can't think of anything else. I'm like looking around my house, like, what else is there? I really can't think of anything else. Because I feel like I covered honestly, a lot of psychic stuff just crosses over with the tarot reading stuff from the beginning. And then I feel like I covered the main points of it. Excuse me, I've got a yawn. Oh, goodness. yeah, I feel like I got the majority of it there. But if you have any myths or anything that you've ever heard and you're just not sure if that's true, you know, feel free to drop me a message or a DM and ask me. And I'd be happy to do more of these or answer them online. Yeah, because there's so many things that I hear and I'm like, really? Yeah, it always surprises me how many things there are that people think. And I'm just like, well, that really isn't right. I think, okay, here's the last one. I know it's just kind of a silly one that I'm going to end on. But there's this belief that if you go and see someone and they're a psychic or they're a tarot reader, then they're like super mystical all the time and they're, you know, on all the time and they're just receiving messages constantly, and then they go home and they like live in a cave and all of this. And that's not true at all. So some people, you know, probably, yeah, I don't know that they live in a cave, but they probably do have that very aesthetic lifestyle, where, you know, they go home and it's all dark and mysterious and all of that kind of thing. But me and everyone I know who is a reader is not like that at all. You know, right now I'm recording this in my pajamas, which are winter pajamas. and I was wearing slippers, which are pink with polka dots on them and little puffballs. And yeah, I haven't done my makeup. I need to take a shower. I look, you know, just like everyone else. Like, it's not fancy. and, you know, that's some behind-the-scenes stuff, because we always, you know, want to, I guess, make it look nice and presentable and fancy online. Or, you know, when you come see me in the shop, I've got everything set up nicely. But, you know, we're just people. Like, we're not... Again, this can be a thing where it's an ego thing that people are like, you know, I'm so mysterious and magical and stuff. And it's like, yeah, to the extent that everyone is mysterious and magical, but not more so. yeah, we're just normal and we make mistakes like everyone else. Being psychic does not mean that you don't ever make a mistake. It doesn't mean that you don't ever, you know, have an accident. We don't all have prophetic vision, for one thing, and for two, even if we do, we still make mistakes, we're still human. so yeah, just, I really hope this does is make you feel less like you have to go to a psychic or, you know, a reader or whatever and feel like you have to treat them as, you know, they're some kind of like on a pedestal, because it's really not like that and you really don't have to. Like, I'm just a person and you're a person and I want to help you, and that's why I'm doing it. and that's what I always want to use my skills for, and that's what I've chosen to do, is use my psychic skills and my reading skills to help people and help people make the most sense out of things and make the choices and choose the paths that are the best for them and make them happiest and make them feel best and all that good stuff. So that's really why I'm doing my thing. but yeah, I hope you'll find this interesting, and I'm sending you so much love. Have a wonderful day or night, and I will talk to you later. Bye.